What do you use?
And he is. Hi. The contract. Good morning. I'm hot.
I have allergies, so I'm like, ugh.
Oh dear.
So if I break out crying, it's not because it upset me. It's because the wind blew the tree.
Knew it.
There's a front and a back.
Yeah, there is. So you don't hit your knees on this bar.
Oh, I'm too sure. I don't have to worry about that.
Oh, thank you.
Was that a present or something?
Yeah,
it's
a Father's Day present. Yep.
I bet you you got a lot of those over the years.
Thank you.
Whoops, I better get out.
Yo, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, I'm going to show for everybody. I think I only know how many wrong ways there are to do things and how few right.
Thank you. me all right. Hello, who's joined us? Thank you.
Okay, it's 10:30. You ready to go?
Ready.
Okay, welcome everybody to the CERT Advisory Board. Today is March 21st, 2017. I'm Cody Barton, current chair, and let's go around and do some introductions. Start this one.
I'm Bill Craig with the Division of Waste Management and Radiation Control.
Jim Buchanan representing Citizens.
Kim Hamler with DEM.
Tara Buchanan with DEM.
Anna Patterson with DEM.
Angela Crowther, DEM.
Bree Boxall, AP Region 8 out of Denver.
I'm John Hart, Environmental Chair, representing the Environmental Cleanup Contractor.
I'm Teresa Gray with Salt Lake County Health Department for local health departments.
Neil Taylor, DEQ.
Kathy Van Dane, Bree, Utah.
Melissa Otley, DEQ.
Kent Bradford, Westinghouse.
Ardeo, Utah State Fire Marshal's Hazmat Section.
And then on the phone, could you introduce yourself on the phone? Michelle Miller, did you say? Thank you.
Anna Boynton, DEM.
And then Bree Sharma also just walked in. Okay. Does everybody have a copy of the minutes? There's a copy over here on the table. Everybody had a chance to review the minutes. If so, is there any corrections or anything that need to be made? From our meeting on December 6th.
I move to approve the minutes.
We have a motion to approve the minutes.
All separate.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Any opposed? Any problems with that? Okay, so we will accept the minutes as they are for December 6th, 2016. So, as of today, or is it next meeting? How does that work as far as John Hart becoming the new chair?
Hopefully you have a copy of this in your handouts. Can get you one.
Who doesn't have a copy?
So this is a copy or a list of those on the advisory committee and the group that they represent and the date that their term expires and then also their attendance over the last couple of years. So as you see, John Brandt, term expires this month, as well as Mark Illum. The next one for their term to expire is Kathy in October.
Okay. So with John Hart, it has been the vice chair. He moves up into the chair position. Does that need to be voted on or approved today? Does it happen today? Does that happen next meeting?
I believe that happens today. Okay. So he was introduced last time, and so today is when he'll be confirmed.
Okay. So with that, we need to vote in a new vice chair. So I will open it up for motions for a new vice chair.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, the majority expire in 2018, therefore they would be vice chair, but would not be chair.
If they didn't get to go back.
That's the thing. If your term expires, but you can go another term if you wish. So there's 2 4-year terms. This is just the first term. But however, I think that Teresa, you've already served one term. It's your second term, is that right?
So is there a limit on the terms that can be served?
Two terms. That's it. 8 years and you're out.
And you're out.
Yeah, bye-bye.
And I want to be chair.
Yes.
So that's the opposite.
Teresa's been chair.
John, John's not here, is he? I spoke with John on the phone. He said he wants to still participate. He just would like to have more notice of the meetings. And apparently he's not here today either. So I don't know what we would do with that. But
I provided notice of this meeting.
There's sufficient notice in there.
Right.
So don't have a problem with that. No, that was just his comment.
Okay.
So he expires this today.
Today, as well as Mark Gillum, who, though he's only served one term, isn't able to serve again or doesn't want to continue with the second term.
Mark doesn't?
Right. So we actually have two individuals to replace, John Grant and Mark Gillum. So John's from the public sector and Mark is from regulated industry, fixed site regulated industry.
I think that whether even if John chooses, if he wants another term, I think we have the option to decide whether we want him in that second term.
That's right.
And I think right now, when the last time he attended, so he was, it shows that he was here in December?
Yes.
Okay. And he's not here today. So do we need a motion whether we need somebody to make a motion to decide whether he does or he doesn't, or does he need to
He doesn't him? Want to continue.
John does either?
No.
Okay.
Oh, you mean John Brandt?
John Brandt.
Oh, John Brandt. Yeah, we probably have to have some type of a motion whether we want to have him continue, even though he says he would like to. He's only attended once in 2 years.
Right.
So I'm not sure that I would recommend him continuing with the second term.
So how does that process? Do we make a recommendation to replace him on that board?
Yes, I would.
I'll take a motion.
A motion and I vote on
it. I would take a motion.
I move that John Grant not continue. Is that the right motion?
Okay. There is a motion that John Grant did not continue on the circuit.
Second.
And a second. Is there any further discussion on that issue? All right, take a vote. All in favor of John Grant? All right. Any opposed? Okay.
So now we need to find some replacements.
Yes.
So probably that should be a matter of discussion of if anyone knows of any groups, either from the public sector, from regulated industry, that might be interested. Now, Chris reached out to the Utah Manufacturers Association. He's talked with them back and forth by email. He also called Matt Bowdry, who works with DEM, and Matt works with the Utah Public-Private Partnership, so he works with the industries and so forth, so that they're working together with government, and he was hoping perhaps through Matt Bowdry to come up with some ideas of who would like to serve. He was thinking maybe we even ought to have somebody from the Utah Manufacturers Association. That would be fine. It needs to fill the slot of regulated industry. So somebody that has chemicals on site, that has, it's a tier two reporting facility or submits under the toxic release inventory would be authorized or enabled to fill that slot. And then from the public, just any interested individual.
And are those
Now,
I guess those are the only two right now. I guess immediately then myself and me will be up again up for readings. Oh, that's next year.
Could I ask about B.L. Fifield? Is he still not eligible? I know it was discussed before the last time.
We'd have to ask Jonna, but I believe it would still
You'd still be not eligible. Okay.
But we can double check. John is on his way here.
Is there anyone else that, anyone that DM is aware of that might be interested in serving on the advisory committee?
I've got one person. I'm just going to text her and see if she's something she
Okay, so I guess really you're just devoting thinking who we could have to fill those positions. I don't know if we can have them right outside right now.
We don't have to.
We would probably have a goal maybe to have them submit applications between now and June.
If you're aware of anybody, if you'd like Dean, can you reach out to him or DM just let us know? I'm taking Chris's place for today, as you're aware, Chris has run the DEQ side of the CERC anyway, but he's absent this week, he's out of town. So if you could just email me and let me know if you're aware of somebody that you think might be interested in serving.
Would it be to our advantage to reach out to Matt, where he works with all of the private sector, to provide him with the parameters, maybe help narrow the search as opposed to going to the phone book? Or
yeah. Or even, can we do this through our local LEPCs? Can they say, hey, or pass it down from the CERC to the LEPCs and say this information is available for public private sector?
Absolutely, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it would be great if we had too many.
Are those the only two positions that are not filled on the board?
Yes.
That need to be filled?
Okay. Yes, that's right.
I don't know why I was going to be a question. I was
wrong. Well, there, I know we're going to get into this later on in the agenda, but it's been suggested that perhaps DOT might want to have a position for DOT in the advisory committee, but I guess we'll discuss that later.
Okay.
I'll just throw it out. See if she can get back to me. The person that I'm thinking of, her name is TJ Huser. She works for FETSA, which has, they do fancy wood millwork stuff. They have a large operation in West Valley, a smaller one in West Jordan. But I know her background is working out in the Vernal area in the basement with cleanups on large scale industrial sites and stuff like that. So, she's a regulated industry, but also has worked on environmental cleanup projects. So.
Great. That'd be good.
Okay, just so we'll get that, get the word out, talk to your LEPCs, go back, and we'll work with you, Matt, and come up with some names for the next meeting. At this point, still, we'll need a nomination or recognition for vice chair. Going based on who has already done it, obviously myself, Reed, and Teresa, and Mark as well. Mark no longer is under consideration. So, and then obviously, so based on who we have on the committee, Kathy,
John,
Dale,
Kim,
and Jeff.
Kathy is going to be leaving us in October, unfortunately, right? I mean, isn't it your second term?
I don't know. I didn't think it was two terms yet, but I could be in error.
Well, let me check. I'm not sure.
Doesn't seem like it's been two terms.
Good. Good then. Perhaps Kathy could then.
No, thank you. I'm the least knowledgeable person here. It's just there is a seat for an environmentalist, and if I was, and you had a very difficult time filling the seat, as I recall. I think it took 2 years to get it filled.
Right.
So I'm.
I'm going to try to nominate.
Please.
I'll nominate John Purchase.
John is
the chair.
He's now the chair.
He's now the chair.
I'm the chair.
I missed you. John,
you're doing close.
Okay, my turn finishes up today, and John starts.
Now, I'm sorry, I misunderstood that piece. Well, then, I'm going to nominate Jim Buchanan.
Yeah.
Because he's always in the line of...
Yeah, you just looked at the math and went 20-20.
We have a nomination for vice chair. The nomination is Jim Buchanan. Definitely second that.
I'll second that.
All right, John, I'll second that. Any further discussion on the matter?
Thank you, John.
I'm not going to ask for one. I'm not going to ask. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So beginning in June, John will be, I got to begin as president today. Should I hear
yes,
as he chair did. Today?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, it hasn't been approved yet by the CERC, okay. So it probably would be best for you to get there.
Okay. And then would we put that as far as Jim, does he need to be approved by the CERC today, or is he going to put on the agenda to be approved in June and he would happen in October?
He's going to be approved in the next meeting. We'll talk about it today, and then he'll be approved in the next meeting.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean he can't still function.
All right. Okay, so that's that. We'll move on. Getting to informational items. First on the list is administrative items. Fixed site regulated industry replacements. That's kind of what we just discussed.
That's what we were talking about, yeah.
Same with the general public representation. Right. Represented. Meeting telecommunication issues.
The meeting telecommunication issues were that people had a hard time listening or hearing what was going on in the meeting here over the phone.
Right.
And so what we've done today is we've got this new equipment plus these little microphones in the other parts of the room. Michelle, can you hear what's going on? It's charged, but apparently it doesn't hold a charge, maybe, or...
Is it blinking green?
It's not even blinking now.
Oh, it's
okay. So that's
is there a way to turn Michelle's volume up for us to hear her better? Or Michelle's just going to have to shout.
Yeah. Michelle's going to have to shout. Not sure if I push anything. Disconnect her. I can mute her.
Yeah. All right. As long as you can hear us really well. I know that was a concern that I've had as well. I've called in and you can't hear anything. I appreciate you guys looking into that and finding a solution. Okay, anything else on that?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, next on the list, review the draft guidance sent out on February 28, 2017 by Jim Buchanan.
Thank you. First of all, I need to apologize. Apparently, if you're on Google email, you can't be set up in drop boxes or whatever, because apparently some of you tried to set me up and I don't, so I'll give you an email address, I think, from the college that should work on that. So what I did is, those of you who know me, I believe in accessing what's already been done as opposed to reinventing the wheel. So I reached out to different organizations and reached out to Kansas State, Nebraska, Louisiana, Georgia, and North Carolina, who already have programs in place similar to what we are proposing to do. Based on that information, I went through with my own perspective of what I felt needed to be accomplished based on the last two meetings that I've been to. Tried to keep in mind that this is going to be really one project, but there's two parts. I envision a booklet or an electronic version that covers a lot of information. Presentation part, depending upon the group that's being presented to, will have to be modified. If I do a presentation to a room full of emergency managers and I spend as much time going over history of LEPCs as I would with I'll call it novice group, they're going to be bored and I'll know it. They'll either go to sleep or get up and walk out. So I think there needs to be two components. One, some type of a, I'm going to call it a booklet or electronic, where the information is stored and can become available as a resource or as a textbook. Presentation could then be taken out of that, depending upon the group. I had an opportunity, thanks to the warm weather, to interact with a lot of the local officials and emergency managers in Region 1, which is the six northern counties. And I found that in some of our elected officials, you mentioned LEPC, yeah, I think I have one, but I don't have any idea what they do. Emergency managers, if they've been around for a while, they understand it and can put it together. The new ones are going, yeah, it's one more hat I have to wear, but I don't have any idea how I'm going to get started or where I'm going. So I put this together to come up with a textbook, for lack of a better word, that we can address some of the issues that apparently may make our LEPCs better. Now, this is not by any means set in stone. This is me looking through six or seven different state programs that go from very little highlighting to one that even goes in and says, as the vice chair, how do you become better at being the vice chair, and gives you a whole bunch of steps and things you can do. I'm not sure where we want to go on that one. But I think this outline looks at ways that we can provide to the local communities a way to either start an LEPC, restart an LEPC, or help them refine it to make it better. Because I think from what I'm finding from the ones I've talked to, and it's only the northern half of the state, and they're sometimes been known to be a little different, is they're all over the board. It works, it doesn't work, I need help, I don't need any help. And so I'm going to look to, you know, to read, coming from the Valley, I'm going to assume, Reed, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, there's a pretty good understanding of LEPCs in the Valley and what they do and how they function. Yeah. But if we leave the mountains and go to other areas, do you have the same in the area you represent?
Depends on where you go.
Where you go. Some of the bigger communities, they're okay, and others are still kind of struggling. So I kind of looked at extracting information from these other areas, and how do we come up with a program that benefits everybody? And I hope I looked at the right emergent or executive order, or 1, 2, 3 that we're going to discuss. I think it's 122 pages long. If I got on the right one, it's all color and pictures and graphs. And I'm going, okay, if I had to do a presentation on 122 pages, depending on my audience, how would I do it? Because you could do it for people to understand, and 8 hours later, and I know some have felt that there was too much education, too much history, but I think it needs to be in there because we're looking at the total group. From somebody, as Kathy's alluded to here a little while ago, and I differ with you, I'm probably the one who needs to learn the most. We're starting with people who may not understand what an LEPC is, what an elected official is, and I thought we needed to come up with a way that we could get those elected folks to better provide better support. Then I went and met with some of our people who have Tier 2 reporting, have chemicals. They have an understanding from their side, but not so much from the other side. So somehow we got to bring those together. So I'm looking for those of you from the private side to help me, help the committee put in things that as a government representative might need to know about the private sector. The private sector, what does the government need to know and why? You know, is it one more report we have to collect on the government side? It's one more piece of paper I have to put out. This is what I put together. And like I said, this is my first draft based on a senior citizen with nothing to do on an afternoon, looking through what other people had done, and apparently it works, because they've all published them and they're moving forward. So that's where I got to this. And I brought a pencil, lots of erasers, and so I'm free to change. Maybe I'm going in the wrong direction based on the last two meetings that I've been to. And if I am, then tell me where I'm going wrong and we can make this happen. But again, I apologize for not being able to access some of the documents that were put out there in a Dropbox. And it's funny because I have one for DEM. When I teach, I get all the stuff dropped into it and it works. And Chris told me the other day that they can't drop anything to me because I must be a bad guy or something. I don't understand it. But anyway, so this is my first step, so I'm all ears. Am I up in the night? Am I going down the right direction? Are we going the wrong direction? What do we need to do? Those of you that have been here for a while.
If I can jump in, sure. And I don't know if this is the best time to comment, at least from a federal perspective, and I know it's kind of the scarlet letter right now being ahead, but at least depending on how you as a group want to operate, this is very much how we try to provide outreach in education and those type of things. Not all states are as involved as your sir, so that's fantastic. That's actually very exciting for us to see your guys' level of involvement. That being said, I know from at least our perspective, we can try to provide training on, and that was what I was going to talk about too, we can do LAPC 101. We also have brought around some of the states in our region and done training for chemical facilities, so it is trying to outreach on the private side and the public side and really try to approach bringing those together. That being said, depending on the direction that you guys want to go, you know, there certainly are resources we can provide, because at the end of the day, we don't want you to reinvent the wheel. You know, obviously, and how I present, I try to keep it at the local level, because, you know, no one really cares what citation, federal, blah, blah, something comes from. It comes from what do you want to do at your local level. So, you know, I'd be more willing to share anything that we've already presented. You know, certainly your LAPC conference, you know, we certainly be involved in anything like that. Even different regions, there's another region for EPA that has this, it's pretty verbose, but it's very comprehensive about what type of, you know, just different things for LAPCs in general and consideration. I'm glad that you share it for you as well.
Okay.
Thank you. You know, certainly any assistance we can provide, you know, I'm glad we work with you.
Okay, thank you.
No, I think this is a great outline on overall training for an LAPC. It gets back to what is our objective. And as I understood it, the objective was that the advisory committee previously put together an LAPC handbook that covers a lot of this information. And I think that's still available online, right? But what, as I recall, the need was that LAPCs were concerned that their county commissioners didn't understand what an LAPC was all about. And so this was to develop a presentation to be given to county commissioners, mayors, that type of thing, so they could understand what an LAPC is. And my concern was that I think we could only maybe get an hour at the most with the county commissioner, maybe an hour and a half. And so that we got to focus on the key items of what can the LAPC do, what can it do for you?
Let me throw this out to you. First, before I forget, I really like that LAPC means thing.
Okay.
The only change I would make on that is where it says coordinate, I would just have it say coordinate dot information, or coordinate information from the public view instead of all. And I just attended that Isotope Crossroads TTX with the FBI and DEQ. And I just felt like that there's an element out there of stuff that we know is proprietary and is not open to public dissemination as much. So we kind of have to recognize that a little bit. But otherwise, I like where you're heading with it. I do think that one of the things that will mean the most to our elected officials is going to be the liability side. And using West Texas as an example of the liability side of what happens when you don't have these things. It's not just a feel-good thing for the public. It is a risk exposure element that all communities have, some type of insurance or insurance group. And maybe that's a group we, as I think about it, that we've never really tapped, but we might look to IRMA, Utah Risk Management Mutual Association, and some of the other groups that are involved with the insurance. And then the counties, counties have a mutual group.
Cities.
That might be an area that would be helpful in terms of promoting the need for an LVPC and understanding the risk in the community. Because I think in ways, I know I've approached it as a regulator of not being anti-chemical, because I know we all need chemicals to have all the stuff we wear, everything we want to use, but we may have swung the pendulum so far over that way that we've understated the risk of what's in our community and why we need to, you know, be aware of that risk and what can go wrong.
One of the things, following up on both of your comments, not wanting to make this outline too long, one of the states, Louisiana, has a program already in place for what is an LEPC, why do I need an LEPC, what is a CERT, who's responsible, what is expected to be done, who pays for it, who can join it, and what risks do I have if I don't. So I think that information is out there and can be easily expanded underneath this as we do a presentation for elected officials. And Neil, if you can get an hour and a half with the county commission, would you let me know how you do that?
Yeah, okay, that's my point.
15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Is about it. I've done a presentation to the Association of Counties on what emergency management is, and they gave me 15 minutes. That you could talk for probably a couple hours. So getting in, but I think, you know, Reed brings up a valid point. If we can look at the risk side, because that's something that gets their undivided attention. If this is going to cost me money, they pay attention. And factor that in, whether it be through IRMA, and I don't remember the one through the county, they have, reach out to those groups and to be able to say, there is a risk if you don't do this, and here's the potential risk. Not just Washington, D.C. watching you. There's a risk that you can end up being sued, and that gets a lot of people's attention nowadays.
So if that is the need, I'm sorry, I'm speaking too much. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
If that is the need, then probably my recommendation is, and if that's the length of time we're looking at, we ought to perhaps focus on what is the key information we need to be giving to them, 15 minutes or so, on what an LEPC is.
And I think we could. I think if we had 15 minutes and we had a 10-page, 20-page document, we could extract out what's going to get their attention. Because then if you tweak their interest, hopefully they would go back and look at what the material you gave them. No, it's no different. We've all taken college courses or courses, and you get a textbook, and you look at the textbook, and you go, holy cow. And then if you're an instructor, you got 15 weeks to get through 900 pages. You have to go in and pull the information out that you want them to get, and hopefully they're going to open that book and go back and read it. And I think if we can encourage, I guess encourage is the right word, that they need to look at the risk, because there is a risk.
Not only, you know, you could be held liable for that, and there's a cost associated with it, but these are the locations that are within your jurisdiction that we have records on. And that was something that was very valuable when we went through and did a community health assessment, and we're sitting down with all the mayors and the community councils, was to say, not only this is the community health department assessment, this is why it was important with the health department, which this is, but also this is what the trends are showing in your community.
Right. I know when I worked for Brigham City, I got to be able to interact with the planning and zoning group. So they want to bring in a great big company. we got to a point that what risk is that company bringing as opposed to jobs, the economy? There are some risks, and is Brigham City willing to accept those risks, or what does Brigham City need to do to mitigate those risks? Well, we have to put in a new fire station, whatever the case may be. So I think there's a way that we can get to mayor, city councils, county commission boards, and get that, and hopefully present a seed that will ask those folks to reach out to their emergency management folks, their business industry, how do I make this better?
See, and I like exactly where you're going from this is exactly what I think you need, and I agree with Neil, kind of pulling everything together, that there are several different groups of people that we're going to have to approach.
Yep.
Creating that 15-minute program or whatever it is, it's not going to be one-stop shopping. So having all of this to glean from and pull from and having it in a format that, I mean, the LAPC handbook that we created is great. Being able to use it as a tool, but to continue with what you have here and have the community continue there, but be able to have it in a format that, yes, this is what we can pull for, you know, county. One that hasn't been mentioned is the sheriffs.
Yes.
And that's a completely different group of, that's a completely different mindset. Your commissioners and your mayors and your, that group, it has one mindset. The sheriff has a completely other. I don't talk, well, I talk to my commissioners. I have a good relationship with my commissioners. I don't report to my commissioners at all, right, ever, for any reason. As an emergency manager, I go through my sheriff every single time and he goes to them. And so there's a buffer there that also, that those guys could, that the sheriffs could really help with that as well. And I think it'd be a different presentation completely almost. Not completely, but
well,
exponentially.
I think like you were saying, you could put together, here's all the material on the board. I'm going to go to this group. I'm going to pull out of here. Because I'm sure a lot of information that I've got, if I'm going to go talk to the Utah manufacturers or someone is, I may be missing the boat. There may be a lot of information they'd like to know that I'm not privileged to, or I don't understand, or so I think, you know, we could put together, I'm going to call it a reference book, and then when we, whoever gets to go do the presentation, says, this, I'm going to meet with this group, I'm pulling out this part, and this part, the presentation goes together, and this presented.
And as it's put together, I think we can even illustrate in whatever we decide, whatever format comes out, that, hey, whether it be a color code or however we want to indicate it somewhere in there, that, hey, this applies to these groups,
yeah,
this could apply to, but no, I personally like where you're going with it.
And I actually like it in the idea of the, because I know when I take notes and write, I do good old-fashioned outlining method. And I think that to have targeted titles and then bullet points for those areas is far better than spending too much time putting in too much detail. Because you do have the other kinds of information that the federal government's produced that we can get a hold of to use for longer term and for, you know, or longer types of presentations, and people who are more interested in reading it. But I'm looking more at the executive format of, this is what this is, you know, the definitions you need to get, because they all end up tripping us up if we don't. So you have a little section of definitions, and then you have kind of like you've laid out here, and just leave those in smaller, not one sentence, but two or three sentences at most, bulleted points. The advantage to that is that somebody, even looking at that, may get a lot out of it and actually read that and scan for things that, as they pick up on stuff. But they're actually probably going to spend and get more out of it than if they tried to read this whole long narrative story that goes page after page after page. And the other thing it will help us with is consistency. Because I speak different than you speak, different than someone else does, and we have our own local story to tell and things that fit. But if we've got the core message that keeps getting in and it's repeated by each of us as we go through consistently, that would help.
I think too, because I think putting together this book, it's like when you put together your LEPC handbook and you put together the emergency manager handbook. The minute you put it out and everybody gets a copy, you think you got the latest and greatest, only to find out something changed. So I think there needs to be links that would take somebody who wants to do more research going in and be able to get the latest and greatest. Otherwise, we're going to be changing this. We could change it probably monthly.
Could you use the LEPC handbook that's already been prepared by this group previously? Where is that now? How can you get to that?
It's online. They're actually in the process of updating it at the moment. It will be sent out again.
Is there a way to tie these two efforts together?
I think you could.
Absolutely.
I think in addition to that, what works really well and is worth the best is not just the bullet in hand, the bullet points that goes through with the presentation, but just a concise elevator speech that we want on that, and then what are maybe five to six topics that are consistent, and then just a word for what is unique to that specific gift.
Do you guys have, and this may be a dumb question, but like a pamphlet? I know in the Front Range Denver there was an LAPC, and I can either provide it to you or put you in contact, but it's just front and back page, hey, we're the LAPC, this is what we do, just real kind of high level stuff, but it had pretty pictures and, you know, just something that maybe even the commissioners to grab, okay, here's the background, so you can go into a little detail what you're going to find.
No, we have a motion.
I don't have.
So that Dropbox, I put in basically what our communication message was that we put together for going out and doing our community health assessment. And so you could just use that basic format in the slide presentations that were just open for everybody in the communication. I apologize if you weren't able to get into that.
No,
but we'll have to work on that. But it wasn't specific to this, but I think it's really nice to look at an already established marketing plan instead of having to reinvent that each time. And it's worked very successfully for us.
Good. How about those of you from the private world?
I think this is it me, I guess. Huh? Mm-hmm. I think this is really good, Jim. I would maybe suggest one additional category under here is maybe working with regulated industry and talk about, you know, how to do that positively, how to, you know, what kinds of things industry might be looking for, maybe include a sample MOU. I know that, you know, we're always getting requests from either our insurance company or if a regulator comes to visit, the CPA or whoever, they always want to know, do we have any memorandum of understanding with our local responders? And, you know, we struggle to do that. We reach out every few years and we get some head nods, but it's really hard to, it seems like, to get the local to actually, you know, sign an agreement with. But how to, because most industries would be, you know, welcome you to come out, see their facility, you know, learn where their chemicals are stored, talk about what they could do in terms of responding to smaller events, at what point would they need outside help, and, you know, maybe train together, or depending on the size of the industry, but maybe a little bit of how to engage them, because they're the ones you want coming, or one of the stakeholders you want coming to your LEPC meeting.
Okay.
You bring up an interesting point, and it's a point of disconnect between the federal view of government and management and the local view. Because I've seen that before where a business specifically wanted something from the fire department, which an MOU would essentially be a contract. And yet a fire department responds based upon the general public welfare. We don't have a specific agreement with any of our citizens to provide any specific service at any specific time, because that's part of the it's where governmental immunity comes from. There's a lot of stuff that comes out of that context, and so what we need to do is find a way to bridge that gap or educate those people that are saying this is what you need to come around to the idea that an LEPC is an open organization that you can become a member of, that doesn't cost you to become a member of, that you have full rights to the moment you come to it, and that it really truly is that transparency that everybody's talking about. Because that's the one thing I see with an LABC is that you can't really get into a contractual arrangement with each entity. That would be problematic and would violate the whole freedom of information system.
Yeah, I think what they're looking for is not something really that tight, just more of a coordination kind of an agreement. I mean, we certainly don't want the responders to come if they've got a higher priority someplace else, but just an understanding that, you know, we want to work together, here's what we can provide, here's what we can provide, and I don't, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know how to phrase all that, but...
Well, I think sometimes what happens, too, is you have a facility that, hey, what's your emergency response plan? If you have a chemical incident, they say, hey, call 911. Well, the fire department may not realize that that's their emergency response plan. So it's just kind of a way to make sure everyone's talking in the same place that, okay, if you depend on the fire department, make sure they know that. Some facilities are more self-sufficient than others, too, so just kind of level the playing field. But a very excellent.
I think that's just one kind of small subset. Just for this, I think just something about, you know, how to engage your local industries, how to get to know them, how to, you know, make invite them and get them to participate in your LAPC.
Because that's one of the comments I heard that we need to figure out, this group needs to figure out how to get the private sector involved in LAPCs, because some aren't, some are, some come, some don't. And so I think that's a way that is part of that toolbox. How do I reach out to those tier two or those companies in my jurisdiction I need to work with? And how do I make that introduction? You know, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you, and all of a sudden the shutters go up.
Right, yeah.
Type of a thing. It's, if I call you and you know me, there's a better dialogue. When I got in this business, I don't know how many years ago, before some of you were born, I met with the emergency manager of Questar. Questar at that time was Mountain Fuel. He told me, if I know you and you know me, you're going to get things that if I don't know you, aren't going to get. If I want to call Rocky Mountain Power on a power outage, and I know those people, I know how to get the information I want. If I just call up as a citizen and ask for it, they're going to tell me it could be 3 to 5 hours or we have no idea. And there's a lot of resources, having worked at Western Zirconium, that you have to provide to the community that makes you a better partner, because you've got people who are trained and can come in and do training that somebody else might have to go find and pay to bring them in. So I think there's a real partnership to be had between the government side, the private sector side, and working together for the ultimate goal, which is to provide protection to this community. And to remove those horror stories that we all hear about of what ethyl-methyl bad stuff everybody produces and, you know, all that stuff. So I think there's a part that we can include in that addresses those fixed facilities. And having done some mutual aid agreements with cities, you have 17 different cities, you have 17 different attorneys, they all have a different word they want to use. I can only imagine what it would be if you're coming up with one between a municipality and a private business.
Now, one of the things that has worked well, interestingly, and that's why I was like right in the door at the start of the meeting, is that I was out at Cisco Intermountain, the Cisco Foods people, and they do an annual tabletop exercise with key staff and local responders. And so I was there for a good part of it. I had my hazmat team guy in there with part of it. That relationship came about because they come and participate in my LAPC. And so one of the things that we've tried to spin is the individual taking responsibility for their situation and what they do. And then we're coming in as a technical reference kind of subject matter expert to participate in their exercise, but they're still taking responsibility for their plan and facility and how it operates. And it's great philosophically, because I think it gets to less of government being thought of as big brother and more thought of as the assisting responder. And it's interesting because we actually watch changes take place in their plan over the last few years because of things that came out of that. And so they're like an hour long that we do with businesses. And there's almost every year an aha moment where somebody says, well, we do this. And then, okay, have you ever checked that to see that it really does that? And she looks around the table and it's like, oh, we have an after action item, you know. Write it down. But yeah, I think that's the speech to, or the work, and I like including regulated industries is more how we can support the efforts they take on their own, encouraging them to continue doing it.
Well, Kent, if we'll come up with a regulated industry, could we, with your help and others, put together a sample MOU that we could put in the toolbox?
Well, I'm sure we could, yeah.
That opposed to going and saying, well, you need to develop one, and they're going, I don't know where to start. Whatever. If we had a sample that they could look at and go, well, this isn't that complex, we could tweak it and make it fit, whether it's big, small, or whatever.
Yeah.
But at least it would give them something they could pull out of the drawer and go, I got a place to start.
Yeah, I'm sure we could do that.
You might check with the refineries. I believe they have MOUs with some of the fire departments,
okay.
Salt Lake City and South Vegas. I know they have mutual aid agreements.
Okay. Jim, thank you. I think that we've got quite a bit of discussion that we can unlock for you to pull back in and add to it and refine. And I really appreciate the work that you put into it and where we're going with it.
Thank you.
Okay. Art, we have domestic nuclear protection office presentation.
Nope, we don't.
Never mind.
That's what I'm saying.
Hazmat scene cleanup. Okay. Neil? This says group, but I think I need you.
Well, I'm not exactly, again, this was not my agenda, but I'll do the best I can. I think we didn't we review this already, this map? We discussed this in the last meeting, so I'm not sure why it's on the agenda again, except that if you have any concerns or questions about it, why, let me know, as I've got a correction already today from Teresa. And so basically what we created was something that could be handed to emergency managers through the state and local officials, so they know if they've got a spill in their area, who they contact, or somebody to come and provide oversight for cleanup of hazardous materials spills in the area. Okay, so that's what that is. Then there's this legislation that Chris had. I don't know if you sent it on from Oklahoma that talked about that involves licensing individuals for cleanup. Did anyone in this group bring that legislation to Chris? I'm not sure how he got
it. It was probably one of the things that was talked about, the Western CERT state. So I know that we connected with a couple of different communities or states, and they even referred us to some of the Midwest and Eastern states stuff that they're doing.
Okay. All right. So I've looked through the legislation. First, you have to have the authority for the legislation. So at first, on the first page there, I've got the statute from Oklahoma that says, yes, DEQ, Oklahoma DEQ, you can have the power to license, supervise, govern, and regulate highway remediation cleanup services and adopt rules. And basically, they put together a list of companies that are certified to these types of cleanups in highways. Now, in other parts of this law, it says to fund this program the first year, everybody that wants to be on this list of certified contractors has to pay the state $10,000, and it's $1,000 a year after that. And then DEQ says, okay, then we'll put together a list of those that we've received this bribe from. And then I guess they put together an inspection group of the committee or something, and that decide who's certified and who's not. So we also in Utah have authority within DEQ to license and certify certain groups. Right now, we license asbestos remediation contractors. We license groups or companies that clean up homes where there's been meth labs previously, and so they clean up the home and make sure it's cleaned up appropriately. So there is history behind DEQ doing that type of licensing. Yes?
And radioactive.
That's right. There's another example. So we do license groups within DEQ, so there is some precedent, and I guess Oklahoma does what we've been talking about. I think it would be really tough here in Utah, especially in today's climate, where EPA's getting their funding cut by 30%, and if we're looking at decreasing the amount of regulation for environmental agencies, I think it would be difficult to have legislation pass in Utah that would authorize DEQ to license these contractors. But if it did pass, we'd have to have some type of funding mechanism with it. Oklahoma just says, okay, companies pay us $10,000 and we'll do it for you.
Oklahoma also charges their LAPCs
$1,000? No, not charges. They charge the regulated industries a fee, every single one of them. That's how they give their LAPCs a significant amount of money every year.
Is that right?
I mean, Oklahoma's got a pretty good system to
have the money, I guess you'd do it.
Yeah. Well, my concern, and I guess I kind of have a really hard time with this. My sister-in-law just spent 3 months going through school and had to take 2 state certification tests to put paint on fingernails. I'm a state licensed hunting guide. I have to take a state certification test and pay a fee every year to guide hunts. I don't understand why there's not a license or a certification requiring, as a hazmat technician, I'm required to have a certification to contain the stuff. But the person that's going to come and take it from that point to another point and transport it across an area of any direction and dispose of is not required to be licensed. And I don't understand why there's, in my opinion, a lackadaisical approach to that. I don't personally agree with, I mean, I guess maybe that is the direction that we're going as far as this regulation takes that way. But this is not one of those things that is small in nature. I kind of feel like there's a laissez-faire approach to this, and I think that it should be pushed. I think it should, and I think this is the group that should be at least start that conversation, whether we, I don't know the process. You know, discussing it with legislators to get a feel for legislators, I think it should be regulated. I think there should be a licensure. I think there should be a process involved with however it may be, whether we mimic Oklahoma or find whoever, but there needs to be regulation of cleanup and transportation. We can get to transport the stuff. Any of you guys that transport it, you're regulated. You've got to have a license. You've got to have certifications to transport it. But once it's spilled, the guy that comes and gets it doesn't have to be. It makes zero sense to me at all.
Talk to Representative Hawks, H-A-W-K-E-S.
Okay.
He works with Trout Unlimited. He's a Republican. He's the one that passed the air. He decided that it was needed when they passed the air quality regulation, the laws that they don't have a way to evaluate whether or not it's good bang for the buck. He figured that out. He got that bill through the first time. He's up in North Salt Lake or Balfour or something like that, and I kind of agree with you, and I know that the legislature is really problematic right now, all the time. One of the things I'd like to mention, just because it popped into my mind and might be relevant to this discussion, the asbestos regulation goes through GAQ, and boy, has that been just really gnarly. It's come back. There's been litigation, there's been all kinds of stuff over compliance stuff and everything like that. So it is really problematic, but you are passionate. You should talk to Representative Hawks.
I can't. I don't have a problem with that.
I think District 18, Senator.
The way to make this happen is...
District 18, Senator.
If a group feels like they have some special skill, and there is others out there who are doing their work but are don't want to say fraudulent, but they're not providing people with good quality service, then the people who have the skill will want to be licensed. That's what engineers have done, geologists, all kinds of different professions. So if you have the trade group, you know, that says, hey, we provide this remediation service, and we do it well, and we follow the regulations, and, you know, we're a good quality group, and have that trade group go to the legislature and say, we, as businesses, we want to be licensed so that we don't have fly-by-night people in this business, and that when they hire somebody, they get a good value for the money they're spending. That's something that the legislature will listen to much more than somebody just saying, hey, I want new regulation.
They will. Yeah. I mean, that's the key right there.
Yeah. No, I'm all for, like if, I said, I'm passionate about it. I wouldn't even begin to know where to start.
If you, if well, right there, that's where you start, because if you go to the legislature and said, these guys are running amok and we need to regulate them, and that's not the way. The other way is to go to those that will be regulated, the real professionals, as he's saying. Say, look, we feel like, you know, this would be a benefit to you and be an advantage over those that are a business advantage to you to be licensed and getting their support. And then come the legislature. And if you have industry support, it'll run through.
Yeah, it really needs to be a partnership between the government side and the private sector to get through there. Otherwise, you're going to run into, we don't need another regulation. And when you go up and present your side, there's going to be 35 people going in there and telling you, no, it isn't.
Right.
Associations
and
the
backlash
you get from the Scrap Metal Association. No, I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly, and I can see exactly your point. On the call that specifically that I started this whole thing with, there was a cleanup company that had been called, was on the way, and they were canceled because the tow truck company got a hold of the insurance company and said, we'll do it. And so that's a very valid point, absolutely. That's great. Like I said, I'll kind of continue to bulldog that a little bit. I don't know if necessarily in the capacity as the circuit, if not just simply because I think it's important. I mean, I think that I've kind of got the support of the, I don't know.
We're talking about the Scrap Metal Association too.
Well, I think it really needs to come through this group as opposed to you doing it on your own, because we're an authorized group. It's functioning, and that's one of our areas of concern, at least by limited time, that we should be looking at. How do we protect it? Is it fine the way it is? Do we need to put some regulations in? What do we need to do? And then once we decide that, come up with who are the partners that we want to work with? Do we want to work with the insurance organizations, the fixed facilities, the cleanup, whatever, and put together a coalition to go to the legislature, because you'll find it a lot quicker.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So I guess when it comes to moving further on this point, I mean, is this something that the group is interested in pursuing, like Jim mentions, and looking at the options that I'm using, possibly finding who it is that we need to partner with and work with to.
I think the step we have to take is first maybe consensus here, show of hands, right. who supports the idea, and then a motion to push this to the CERC, because that's our goal, is right. The advisory, is to let the CERC know we think this is a big enough issue that it's something that they should take a look at, because they're the ones who would do these steps that Jim's talking about, of helping to build the coalition. And I'm fully in support of it. I think you're absolutely right. One of the things I've learned is that even big business has a problem with this because they don't have spills for things all that often. Some businesses produce a waste flow that's really, you know, they've got their stuff dialed in because they know what happens if things go bad. So a lot of warehouse industry and people like that, they don't have a lot of spills. It's the rare, you know, situation where they're calling for an outside contractor, and they'll call me and say, any idea? And it used to be go to the yellow pages, now it's, you know, sure on the yellow pages. But
you're dating yourself now.
There you go. But I think that would be a good argument to use to help, you know, push forward why it's important to do is that it's not something that people can be good consumers of. They're not going to have enough knowledge and history themselves to be good consumers. So we're kind of doing it out of a consumer protection side as much as anything.
Yeah, and Reed's got a good point that through this group, in fact, I had actually kind of asked ahead of time, because we kind of heard about some of the fees that the other states are doing to kind of fund that equipment and training. So my question was how do we get something from point A to point B to where at least DPS and possibly DEQ are on board to allow us to go in our capacity as DPS employees and look for a sponsor for legislation? And they said, I was told that if this group makes that motion or that recommendation to the CERC, then that's, you know, then now we've got a documented, I guess, kind of timeline that this has been addressed. These are the things, you know, this is A, B, and C, the reason why it's gone to the CERC. And so now, you know, it's gone through these statutory groups. And so now that's a good case, or good base that we've made to push it forward rather than just saying we'd like to regulate.
So based on the discussion that we've had in this meeting and previous meetings, is there, I guess, any further discussion in support of or against us moving forward with this process?
No, I totally support it, but Chris sent me, and you've all probably got it, and I'm late getting caught up. It's the Utah CERC Future Strategic Planning. And on the second page, response contractor certification is one of the things that have been identified that we either need to address or decide we're not going to address it. So, I mean, it's already in written form. I don't know whether this has been approved or if this is just a wish list, but it's already on there. So I think we're headed down the right road, and we may get to a road that we go, it's not advisable at this time of the year or this time of whatever based on what else is going on, because there's a time to go and a time to go. I think I'll wait. So I would support it.
I think it's one thing that needs to be ran through a couple of the other groups, because what happens a lot of times with these programs is that while they will be written at the state level, then the authority is then given to the locals in order to do that, and so that adds an extra strain on the local health officers. So I think that's another group that needs to be aware of the possible implications of that.
Okay. And how do we go about advising?
We can get off the agenda.
So I guess the next step was I would accept the motion to present this to the CERC for their authorization. Anybody like to make that one?
Guidance.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is just, I guess, listen to this. One thing I would say is it sounds like there's a lot of options out there, because I think if you go to the advisory committee, they're just going to say, well, what do you want us to do? I mean, they want very specific, you know, are you going to suggest legislation? Are you suggesting this? And I think probably if you're in the research mode where you need to look at, okay, what other states do, kind of like what Jim did, what are the options? Do you want a full-fledged program where you actually have auditors go out and audit these companies, or do you just have a simple situation where there's a trade group that certifies them and say you have to have this certification? So I think, in my mind, you're kind of at the research mode where you need to gather research and decide what your specific recommendation is to the CERC, because I think they're going to say, okay, what are you trying to tell us to do? Because they just want to go, yeah, do this or do that. But if it's right. Just kind of like, look at it, I think they're going to come back and say, and even if you come back and say, okay, well, we have two options, option A, option B, I think that's good. But I think this group probably needs to do a little more legwork.
I agree with you, and I guess the motion would be to present that right there, exactly what you just said, to the CERC. So,
well, I make a motion that we present to the CERC that we would like to undertake this project so that we're not out there gathering information and they hear about it through the back door and then all of a sudden, how come we didn't know about it?
Right.
But I think it's more of, we don't know where we're going. We may get to a road and say we don't want to go down that road. But I think we need their approval, or at least their understanding. We're going to move forward. This is what we're going to look at. And at some point, we will come back with recommendation or recommendations as to where we want to go. And that keeps us out of the doghouse, because they're going to call somebody and go, wait a minute, I didn't know anything about this.
Right. No, I agree.
then we're in trouble.
So do you want to, from what you said, do you want to?
I'll make a motion that we make presentation to the CERT board requesting or making them aware that we're going to research and come back with options on a response contractor certification. We're going to gather information. At this point, we're not going to do anything but gather.
So I'll second that. We have a motion on the floor and a second. Any further discussion on that motion?
No, I totally agree with it. I mean, that's one of the biggest issues that we have. Where, you know, I wouldn't say we're one of the companies that do it right, but then there's other companies, like Cody was saying, it's just, it's the Wild West. And the thing is, what really has been driving the response cleanup is the insurance companies. The insurance companies have gotten to a point where they want to save as much money as they can. So in your case, this guy calls and says, I can do a cleanup. Okay, he's going to charge one half of what we're probably going to charge because, you know, we have the insurances, the permits, we have all the trained individuals working for us. So it's just, you know, every day there's a new company now that does, quote, hazmat cleanups. And what we see, the biggest driving factor on the cleanup is the health departments. They have the biggest stick right now. Like Salt Lake County, if we do something in Hurd County, they will not give us a letter of no further action required without meeting these certain standards. So, you know, I'm trying to get quiet on this because I'm, you know, one of the environmental contractors, but I've been doing this here in the Valley for almost 30 years. So, but it's becoming, you know, back in the day, there's probably two or three companies that did this. Now I think I can count 12 people that say they do it, and you've probably got three or four of them that are doing it right. The rest are, you've never even heard of the name before. So, right, cool. I think it's, you know, back when the Highway Patrol had their hazmat team, that was one of the biggest pushes. They were trying to certify contractors doing it, and they got such a pushback on it that they just, you know, they dropped it.
Well, you go out and clean it up and you dispose of it the right way. Somebody else goes out, puts it in a 55-gallon drum, hauls it off to the landfill, and the landfill says, we don't want it.
Right.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, some western, eastern county, guess what, gets dumped alongside the road.
You know, and that's one of the biggest issues. I mean, today they'll go out, say it's a 50-gallon diesel spill, they'll take this much soil off the top, put it back, and say it's good. You know, we'll go out and do it. We've got 20 cubic yards of contaminated soil.
Soil.
And then we do the sampling and we submit it to her department and they say, you know, yeah. So.
And in that, the incident, another incident, outside the one Cody was on, it was 1,500 gallons of gasoline that was unburned. The gasoline truck overturned, caught fire. The fire department extinguished the fire and left 1,500 gallons. The tow truck company calls up and says, oh, I'm the cleanup company too. 6 days later, it's still sitting there. And somebody asked, hey, what's the, I think it was the federal response number. There's a number, and we didn't get one. And so it ended up being a big deal. And that, so it's mainly for big incidents. In the state that I did my fire service time on, the tow truck could clean up anything that fit in a 5 gallon bucket. So you know, we put absorbent down, they cleaned it up, it fit in a 5 gallon bucket, he was good. He had a bin since COVID. Anything above that, like 50 gallons, definitely that was the county health was coming out and they would come out with a, and tell them, here's a list of contractors that your insurance company's not recommending one, you need to get this cleaned up in this amount of time. And it, you know, we were having incidents where there's environmental harm and public safety issues because of this.
Yeah, you know, like I said, we see it every day. And there really are some really great insurance companies that want to ensure that, you know, all environmental damage is removed from the site. And then there's some that, like I said, there's some that they don't care. They want it done by the cheapest way possible in the quickest amount of time that's going to save their stockholders the most money.
Neil?
Yes.
Should somebody from my division be involved in this? Would they regulate the disposal?
Yes, it's very possible.
I'm not exactly sure who exactly, but I think that's probably a touch point.
Yeah.
Waste management.
Absolutely. Yep. So I guess with the motion on the floor.
I'd just like to speak to the motion as well. And
yes.
I think that the role of the advisory group is to bring our perspectives from the various groups that we represent and that it really is the professional staff of DEQ and DPS that will put together the law or actions that need to be taken in the future. I mean, I think that sometimes we take on this elephant that we can't, as an advisory group, really do. So I think we're doing the right thing. I think this is the right motion. We have to let the CERC know it's a problem. We think it needs to be addressed. They can ask us for more advice on it, but ultimately they'll assign staff to
and carry you it. Have to let them know right up front to see if you're going to get their support.
Right, and that's like you asked for the motion. This is what we would like to see pursued. This is our recommendation. We would like for them to approve it and pursue it and assign whoever's going to pursue it.
Right.
With the motion on the floor, having seconded it, no further discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. We'll review that with the CERC in the CERC meeting. Really quick, one more bullet point, and then we'll eat lunch. UDOT and UH participation in the CERC based on spill cleanup legislation. I don't know.
I've read through the legislation, and I can't find a tie-in to the Highway Patrol and UDOT, so I'm not sure what he was talking about there.
Okay. With that, I mean, I guess we can maybe review with Chris what he was wanting to approach with that, maybe put it on the next issue. With that being said, let's eat lunch. Eat your lunch, kind of settle down a little bit. When things start to settle, we'll start back up, maybe call it. Five after 12, we kind of start talking again. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'll talk to you first.
try to focus.
Your role be it done in a year or two. So you might get it done in time to get the first the first batch of stuff that's going someplace.
Okay. Thanks, Reed. Anything else? Okay, John will take it over next meeting. I appreciate the opportunity, and I will take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Thank you. We will re-adjourn at 1:00.
So basically, if you do like, you know, 3 or 4 projects, just kind of estimating where you're going to spend the money for the solution areas. And then really, the only thing you need to really know about your project is just in that project description. So
it's my property. Why do people like Johnson?
So what I'm saying is a way unregulated.
Somebody follows up.
It's my property. And then you're not going to be a renter. It's not going to be a GE or a
exactly.
For somebody.
So I think it's looking at reducing the risk.
A bank of money to help you.
And then the health risk associated with the cleanup companies.
It's going to be everybody who's going
to the best that you can because there's no reason to put all your projects in our application. So, but I mean, it can be as general as you want it to be so that when you come back, you can specify that. Into projects, you can make them, you know, like, if, let's just say, for communications, you know, we're going to enhance our communications, and we're probably going to spend $3,000 on equipment, and, you know, it meets this operational communication, the corporate facility, that's fine, that's really all we need. It's kind of like a placeholder.
And then I'll call Neil and say, Neil, what are we doing with this? But
really just asking you to do, if you can't do that, just, you know, basically say, hey, everybody, based on last year, this is how much money we had, we did this many projects, we roughly allocated this much money to each of these projects, is everybody okay with that? And if they are, go ahead and do that. You don't have to actually do line items like, this is going to Vernal, this is going to UNR, this is going to Duchesne. We just want...
I always forget her name, but
it's exactly like what time she called him.
And like I said, that's why hopefully the worksheet helps you out because you still have to identify a core capability, which basically helps you out. And then the overall narrative is very top, is basically what everybody's doing, like an overarching, this is what we're doing to enhance the reason. So, yeah, we just kind of need something that we can put in the application.
I wasn't even
paying
attention.
May 5th?
Exactly.
Yeah,
they're not even using tax dollars they pay, and that's what gets our service.
Yeah. So, well, that's kind of why, like I said, the systems are going out. Systems are going
to be. Tara, how's your dad?
Puts out to their safety.
What's he doing now?
This hand, they take that, and they fill it out.
Yeah, you're fine.
And
He's over the critical infrastructure protection. So Ralph's part of the liaison for the region. For the state. My dad oversees the region.
911, you call it ago, or the closest engine, or whatever. But start signing agreements and minutes, you
get yourself in trouble.
Well, I had a city attorney who used to be Salt Lake City attorney one time. He educated me well on that point of what we do, our responsibility is only in general. It's not just a get out of that mindset that you have the responsibility. Your responsibility is community of purpose, community of welfare.
Absolutely.
If whatever that happens to be the
Maybe.
It says, once a year, we'll walk through your facility and you can show us.
Is there
any
type of responsibility?
The only MOU I've ever tried, I've never really done, was with Thomas Petroleum Engineering. It was an MOU that said that in the event of a crash, their fuel reserves would come to us to help us in our emergency response.
Yeah, now that kind of MOU is fine. You know, you can do contractual stuff for goods and services and things like that.
Right.
Probably. You just can't get into one that's a.
That ties us and locks us.
Yeah.